fries might look harmless. It's your basic meat, bread, some lettuce, tomatoes, and maybe some potatoes. Some might even consider this to be a perfectly balanced meal. But is it really? I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be dissecting the issues that impact our plates and ultimately our lives. We're going to be delving into the world of fast food and explore all of the hidden costs these preservatives and additives have on our society's health. Fast food has become synonymous with convenience, but at what cost? Fast food, with its high levels of saturated fats, sugars, and empty calories, has played a significant role in the obesity epidemic that we see today. And as we know, obesity is linked to a myriad of health issues, from heart disease to diabetes. Because fast food produces millions of pounds of food every day, it is meant to be affordable and consumed quickly. Most fast food meals are prepared from frozen, canned, or dehydrated products and are simply reheated before serving. These foods are high in calories, but low on nutrition, which means that they'll leave you feeling hungry and cause you to binge eat. Aside from the usual culprits of salts and sugars in fast food, there are many hidden chemical ingredients used in preparing the meal. Chemicals are added to most fast food products to make them last longer and taste better, but these chemicals compromise the nutritional quality of the food. Common chemicals include propylene glycol, which is an additive that stabilizes moisture to prevent ingredients from sticking together or drying out. It is toxic in high doses. Sodium nitrate is a preservative to keep meat products like bacon, ham, or beef fresher for longer while enhancing their color, and this has been linked to certain types of cancer. Synthetic food dyes, which are used to make foods look more appealing, can also cause allergic reaction and has been linked to different types of cancer. And then we have filler products such as cellulose and potassium bromate. They're added to thicken products like meat and bread, and this can interfere with the body's natural nutrient absorption systems. Phthalates, which are found in gloves, boxes, and plastic wraps used to prepare foods, are also commonly found in fast food. This class of chemicals is linked to infertility, pregnancy complications, diabetes, and again, cancer. Fast food chains also rely on large-scale factory farms, which breed genetically modified chickens, pigs, and cows that are fed antibiotics to make them grow faster. And in the end, the antibiotics end up in your body when you eat their meat. Processing foods often involve stripping foods of their natural nutrients, leaving us with meals packed with additives, preservatives, and excess salt. These additives might enhance taste and shelf life, but they come at a price to our health. Preservatives, while extending shelf life, can wreak havoc on our bodies. Some studies suggest a correlation between preservatives and processed foods and an increase in risk of cancer. These additives disrupt our body's natural balance and over time may contribute to the development of various health issues. And now today, we're joined by author Marion Nestle, professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. So Marion, can you elaborate on the nutritional pitfalls associated with a diet heavily reliant on fast food and processed meals? Things like eating a McDonald's burger or even a Subway sandwich every day?
Yeah, well, fast food and what are now called ultra-processed foods are not poison. It's just that if you make them into a daily diet of the normal thing that you're eating, they have a lot of calories, and people tend to eat too much of them. So those kinds of diets are associated with gaining weight, and gaining weight is associated with heart disease and certain kinds of cancers and type 2 diabetes and all of those problems. And what has happened is that the American diet has become increasingly processed and increasingly based on fast foods. And, you know, I've been around for a long time, so I have, you know, historical memory about this. When my kids were young, I took them to McDonald's on their birthdays. It was a really big deal, and they had wonderful birthday celebrations. They still do, actually. But we didn't eat at McDonald's during the rest of the year. You know, I cooked at home. And so it's the difference between McDonald's once a year and McDonald's every day is a large number of calories. And that's really what the problem is.
But even fast food back then tasted different. Fast food seemed healthier and less processed than nowadays. Is that true, or is that just a distant nostalgic memory?
I don't think so. I mean, they were processed from the beginning. What's happened is that the portion sizes have gotten larger. And I had a doctoral student, Lisa Young, who did that research and demonstrated that there was a very large increase in the size of fast food portions between 1980 and 1990 and 2000. And those larger portions have stuck. Larger portions have more calories.
And how have you seen the health landscape change with the increased consumption of fast food?
Well, the most obvious one is that 70% of American adults are now overweight or obese. So that's, obesity has become normal. It's the average. The average person is overweight or obese. And that's becoming increasingly true of children. That wouldn't be a problem if obesity didn't carry risks with it. And it raises the more overweight you are, the greater your risk for developing chronic diseases. So it's a probability estimate. It doesn't affect everybody, but it certainly raises risks. And if I were going to say what the main problem with the American diet is that people are eating too much.
You said that obesity has become the norm, and I think you might be right. Visually, you get used to seeing people who are just bigger and fatter.
Yeah, we're used to people being heavier, so anybody who's not looks odd now. That's what I mean by normalization of obesity. And it carries health risks. It's not that everybody who is overweight has problems, but it raises the probability.
And can you speak to the specific health challenges, such as cardiovascular issues and diabetes, that are often linked to diets rich in fast food?
Well, the first one is type 2 diabetes always, because that's very, very closely associated with overweight. And then type 2 diabetes and overweight are risk factors for heart disease, certain kinds of cancer, bad outcome from COVID-19, and overall mortality.
And are there noticeable trends in the types of health problems emerging due to the prevalence of processed foods in our diets?
Well, the big one is type 2 diabetes. Heart disease has many other causes, and rates of heart disease are down, and rates of many kinds of cancer are down. But the prevalence of type 2 diabetes is increasing.
And how can individuals make healthier choices when navigating a landscape that's dominated by fast food options?
Well, I would say the first thing to understand is how they're being marketed to, and recognizing the extent of marketing and how difficult it is as an individual to fight an entire food system on your own. It's really hard. If there's fast food everywhere, if that's the only food that's available, if it's the cheapest, if you really love the way it tastes and it's designed to be something that you love to eat, that's what it's supposed to be about. And recognize that these foods are widely available, they're cheaper, and they're irresistibly delicious for a reason. And it's all about marketing, because food companies are not social service agencies, and they're not public health agencies, they're businesses. Their job is to sell more food, not less. If you eat less, you're fighting an entire food system.
Is the fast food industry taking steps to offer healthier options? And how can the industry balance profit motives with a commitment to public health?
Well, they can't really unless customers demand healthier options, and their customers are not making those kinds of demands. Under pressure, they may try to remove some of the salt or some of the sugar, or, make smaller portions. But basically, they're going to do what sells. So it's a combination, and this is what people are asking for, it's, I think, asking a lot for them to do something that's against their financial interest, and their stockholders won't let them.
I mean, it sounds like you're asking the consumer to have accountability.
Oh, that wouldn't be me. I would be asking the food industry to have accountability. I got involved in this because I was going to lots of meetings on childhood obesity. And everybody at those meetings would say, how are we going to teach moms to feed their kids more healthfully? Nobody was saying, how are we going to keep food companies from marketing junk foods to our kids in every possible way so that our kids know what junk food is even if we don't have it in the house?
Thank you so much, Professor Nestle, but please stick around. Professor Mary Nestle will stay with us right here after the break. And when we come back, we'll explore a crucial question. Do consumers prioritize cheaper, fast foods over pricier, healthier options when it comes to their diets? Stay tuned for more. In the U.S., the FDA allows new food ingredients like GMOs, growth hormones, and chemical preservatives unless it is proven to be harmful. In contrast, the European EFSA requires additives to be proven safe before approval and has banned the use of growth hormones and several chemical additives. These differing philosophies lead to certain additives being allowed in the U.S. but banned in Europe. And this includes the use of growth hormones ractofemine, which increases lean muscle in livestock, potassium bromate, coloring agents, BHA and BHT preservatives, Alesta fat substitute, and more. And even amongst fast foods between the U.S. and Europe, it is not created equal. A startling difference was found when comparing a single slice of Domino's pizza in the U.S. with a slice of Domino's pizza in the U.K. Now, Domino's is a fast food pizza chain, so you really don't expect it to be healthy or very high quality. But a slice of pizza in the U.S. contains more than twice the additives as the British version and nearly double the calories, while the cheese on the U.K. slice has just a handful of ingredients, things you would expect like mozzarella, milk, salt, and starter culture. The U.S. side has a whole long list of ingredients to include fillers, thickeners, artificial flavoring, and sodium propionate. The pizza dough, like most American breads, also contain potassium bromate, which is a banned ingredient in Europe, China, and India due to concerns that it may be a carcinogen. Potassium bromate is used regularly in the U.S. to strengthen dough and is present in more than 100 products. But most Americans are likely unaware that they're being exposed to substances in their food that Europe considers to be dangerous. Many common foods that we see in the groceries are banned in other countries. Things like Ritz crackers, Gatorade, Wheat Thins, Frosted Flakes, Skittles, Pop-Tarts, and those familiar with Little Debbie's pastry products. These foods all contain dyes like yellow 5, yellow 6, and red 40, which has been indicated they could be harmful to health, especially in young children. So why does the U.S. still allow these ingredients when it has been shown to cause harm? Well, because the food industry has some very powerful trade groups and lobbyists. They claim that the vibrant colors are important to their industry for them to create snacks, juices, yogurts, and desserts. And as a capitalist country, many decisions are made with profit in mind, not necessarily people. In a landmark decision last year, California became the first state to follow in the footsteps of the EU and ban the usage of red dye 3, as well as several other chemical additives in food and beverage products. This dye is present in hundreds of candies and snacks like Ding Dongs, Peeps, and even Pediasure. Hopefully, this will pressure the FDA to make a final ruling in regards to some of these additives. So for this and more, let's bring in again author Marian Nestle, professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. Marian, can you discuss the variation in food regulations between countries, particularly regarding preservatives and additives?
Well, the countries in Europe have more strict regulations than we do. Our approach in the United States is to allow additives until they cause trouble, and then we take them off the market. In Europe, if they can't prove safety, they're not on the market to begin with. So we have a much more laissez-faire attitude towards additives. How much of a problem that is, I have no idea.
Now, in countries with more regulated food industries, do you observe a greater awareness and understanding of the health implications of food choices?
Well, certainly among the regulators. That's why they're doing it.
And what factors within the food industry contribute to the widespread use of additives and preservatives?
They sell. Remember, the food industry is about selling products. You can't get people to eat gray candy. People like eating candy that's very bright colors, so the food industry puts in very bright colors.
Yes, but for example, beet juice can also color a candy red, or another vegetable can be used to turn a candy yellow.
Not as well as the bad ones. You get a much more stable color if you're dealing with one of those organic compounds that's associated with cancer risk. And also they're cheaper. So the food companies want to keep the cost of food as low as possible because that's how they sell it. And they're interested in selling as much food as possible, and they're not going to do anything that's against their self-interest.
So to what extent does consumer demand for convenience and longer shelf life drive the inclusion of additives and preservatives in food products?
Well, I don't think the consumers are fighting for longer shelf life. The consumers are certainly fighting for convenience because people work long hours and that's difficult. But, the food industry is making products that people will want to buy. So there's an interaction there. But people buy foods because they're advertised to, because they're marketed, because they're available, because they're cheaper, and because they like them. So the food industry isn't going to do anything that's going to change that particular formulation because they're in the business of selling more food, not less. And that was never a problem until obesity became a problem, when everybody ought to be eating less. But the food industry makes that very difficult.
Are there ongoing efforts within the industry to explore alternative methods of preserving food without relying on traditional additives?
I have no idea. I'm sure there are. Food has always been preserved. And if you're a company making a junk food, you want it to be as shelf-stable as possible. So you're going to throw everything in it that will do that. And most preservatives are fine. I just don't see additives as being the biggest problem in the food supply. I see calories as being the largest problem.
Actually, I went to the supermarket the other day and I saw that a bag of breadcrumbs had silicone additives. So what do you think about a simple piece of bread having additives like that?
It probably did. It probably did. It'll keep the breadcrumbs from clumping. Oh, it's pretty benign. I'm not aware that silicone is a big problem in the food supply. But if you want breadcrumbs, all you have to do is toast bread and make breadcrumbs. It's very easy to do.
Maybe you're being more pragmatic because you know you can't control the food industry?
Yeah. If you don't like those foods, don't eat them. You don't want silicone in your breadcrumbs? Don't buy them. That's your choice. You're somebody who reads food labels and you're reading the ingredient list. Don't buy that stuff. That's a really easy way to deal with it. But you are fighting an entire food system on your own. That's a big job.
But are there differences in the use of additives between local artisanal products and large-scale mass-produced items?
Yeah, local artisanal products don't have access to those additives. They're industrial additives. They're not going to be using them. Nobody who's making artisanal candy is going to put big organic dyes in them. They're just not going to because they're advertising the candy as being healthier and better made. So, once again, that's your choice about what you're going to be buying.
And in terms of having a choice, artisanal candies, for example, and breads and organic food in general are also a lot more expensive.
Well, of course they are. That's policy. That's because federal policy rewards the very, very large, it rewards big food, big agriculture, big soda, big fast food, big everything. That's where, because of the way the political system is set up, those are the industries that have the political power and the money. And so the government does policies that benefit them. The government doesn't do policies that benefit small producers.
Do you think that Americans are mostly slaves to the whole system?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. The government is sold out to corporations without question because of the way our electoral system works and the ability of wealthy corporations to give as much money as they want to candidates for office. Until the electoral system changes, I don't see how we change that. But that's the first thing to work on. Let's elect people to Congress who are interested in public health. What a concept.
Well, you barely hear that sort of conversation. It doesn't even come up on political debates at any level.
I don't know. When students ask me what they can do, that's the first thing I tell them. Run for office.
When we travel to Europe or anywhere, I feel good after eating, versus people in the States are noticeably known to have digestive issues. Why is that?
I have absolutely no idea, but sounds to me like you need to change your diet.
Do you find yourself buying more organic food and cooking and eating at home?
No, I do both. I certainly am in favor of organics because of the production values. They use fewer pesticides and better methods for growing food, and I think that's a good thing. I'm very fortunate. I can afford it.
Overall, do you think things are getting better or worse in the food industry?
Well, I think it's very easy for people with money to eat healthfully in this country. I don't know why you're having any problems, really. People with education and money can eat just fine. That's not a problem. It's the people who don't have any money that you worry about because the junk foods are so much cheaper than healthier foods. You want people to pick real foods and cook them if they can. And that's become a privilege in our society.
Do you think people are becoming more educated in their food purchases?
Yeah, it depends on who you're talking about. Some people are, some people aren't.
And do you think things are going to get better when it comes to purchasing food?
Well, they are getting better, at least for people who could take advantage of their getting better. I mean, food in supermarkets is much better now than it was 30 years ago. Really, anybody with education and money can eat healthfully anywhere in America because foods are widely available. And it's the people who aren't, who don't know the difference and who don't have the money to do it that you worry about. At least I do.
Thank you so much, Professor Nestle, for all your time today. So, does eating all these preservatives and artificial chemicals take a toll on the body? Absolutely. The U.S. leads in obesity, heart disease, cancer, and diabetes compared with Europe. And while there are differences in lifestyle and stress, food is a major part of this. A much larger fraction of the everyday food sold in European grocery stores is lacking in preservatives, artificial flavors, and artificial colors. In Europe, the food has to be gotten from farm to consumer very quickly, so the supply chain has to be very efficient. There's a lot more slack in the U.S. because much of the food can be stashed away in warehouses for months before it reaches the shelves. This stale food, while it can taste and look appealing, is actually lacking in nutrients. So while it might cost more to eat fresh prepared foods compared to fast foods, the cost to your health and your life might very well be worth it. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.